Tom Jankowski, J-A-N-K-O-V-S-K-Y.
Thank you, Tom. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a third-generation Coloradoan. I grew up in Sterling, Colorado, which is in eastern Colorado. It's actually pretty close to Nebraska, out in the plains of Colorado. I've been in the ski industry, really, since I graduated from college, since 1973. And since 1985, I've been the general manager of Sunlight Mountain Resort. I just retired at Sunlight Mountain Resort recently as a general manager. That went into effect August 31st, so, you know, less than a couple weeks ago anyway. I'm married. My wife and I have six children. One of our children's deceased. My wife, Nancy, is a real estate broker, and she's my biggest supporter as far as being a county commissioner. During my time, a lot of my volunteer time in the 90s was with the Glenwood Springs Chamber Resort Association. I was on that board, and I'm the past chair of that board. Also, I was on the Colorado Ski Country Board of Directors, really from 1985 until 2017. And I'm also past chair of that board of directors as well. I will continue on the Sunlight Mountain Resort board. I'm the secretary there. And I was honored by my peers by being inducted to the Colorado Ski and Snowboard Hall of Fame in 2012. The best thing about me is I'm a proud grandparent of a 2-year-old and a newborn boy and girl.
Oh, congratulations. So why are you running for this position?
Well, you know, I ran 8 years ago because I wanted to see some change, and my peers came to me to run, and also my wife supported me. And there's some things that I still need to accomplish. So, and some of that has to do with economic development, and some of that is the whole economic development picture is changing because we're at full employment. So it's looking at some of the issues such as affordable housing, transportation, health care, health insurance, preschool costs, and some of the things that are now you almost would call infrastructure that are important for workers, for business owners to be able to have a good quality of life here in Garfield County.
So this is a job. What makes you the right person for this job? What are your skills?
Well, thank you. Background as a business leader and as the general manager of Sunlight Mountain Resort, you know, helped get me to where I need to be as far as having a good background. And I have, you know, a background because Sunlight, although it's a fairly large business in Garfield County, and it's still a small business. But so I touched on a lot of different parts of that business. But as far as accounting and budgeting, I definitely was part of that. Planning. And the interesting thing is the planning at a ski resort, a lot of that planning has to do with public land. So I got a good education in working with the Forest Service and some of the environmental impact statements that you have to go through, which that really transfers over very well to a county commissioner where 60% of Garfield County is public lands. I have a background in HR and also operations. So, and to some extent, media and sales, although that has changed quite a bit when I was involved in media, and a lot of that now is social media as opposed to newspapers and radios, et cetera. So, but I have a good background as a business leader, and that really comes from some from my education, but more just on-the-job training.
What did you plan to maintain stable the budget for the county?
Well, that's a good question. Garfield County is in good shape as far as a county goes. We maintain a balanced budget, meaning that just like in your household, we do not spend more revenues than expenses on the operating side of our budget. We're debt-free. We have 1 year of reserves. And, you know, we haven't raised our mill levy, which affects your property taxes, in well over 20 years. But to go back to the balanced budget, I am the liaison for the Board of County Commissioners through the budget process. So I meet individually with our county manager and finance director, and then each department comes in and we go through their budget. And that's actually starting right now for a budget that will be approved for 2019. I think that some things that maybe people don't realize is that we took an enormous revenue hit 2 years ago, where our property taxes from oil and gas dropped $17 million. So we had to do some pencil sharpening and really look at that budget. But we did, even with that $17 million drop, come back with a balanced budget.
What are the top three priorities for small businesses if you're elected? And what should small businesses honor support your campaign?
Well, part of my philosophy is that, government should stay out of the way of business and let business prosper on its own. And so I think that is very true, especially when it comes back to rules and regulations, which all and taxes, which are cost small business time and money, which they then have to pass on to their consumers. So that's one thing. I think the other thing is having a thriving economy. And if our economy can thrive, then small businesses are going to thrive as well. And that's whether it be, in service industry, tourism, food and beverage, or if it's in the trades. If our economy is thriving, then small business can thrive. And I also, want to thank those small businesses and the fact that you have business owners that are taking a risk, that are employing people, and that they are really the background of our economy. And so thank you to them. And then the third thing I think is I believe in the hard work, the free enterprise system, opportunity, the American dream. And again, we don't need social issues to be governed by the government. We need the government to step back and let business operate.
In a county with three school districts, what are your ideas to help address low wages and retain a staff?
Okay, well, I think I'm going to take retain a staff first. And in retaining a staff, I think we get staff here because of the quality of life, because we're in the mountains, it's beautiful, there are lots of different things to do, both socially and outdoors, and so we do attract staff that way. I think our biggest issue is housing, and if we can have affordable housing for teachers, and I appreciate what RE1 has been able to do in that aspect. I think it's just important that a teacher be able to live in the community where they work and have affordable housing. I think to have individuals having to commute for an hour each direction takes them out of the community and away from their students a little bit. So affordable housing is number one. The next is on wages for teachers, and that really is not a county government issue. That really falls back to your school districts and primarily to your school districts. Each school district in the county has an elected board, and it's up to them to address the wages and what people get paid. And even in our county, there's a variance in wages between the Roaring Fork Valley and RE2, which is Rifle, and Newcastle, and RE16, which is Parachute. So one of the things with Tabor is that for a school board to go out and ask for an increase in their property tax and their mill levy, that then goes to the voters. So it to some extent lays to the voters and to the school districts as well, and they're not the districts per se, but their board.
What role does oil and gas play in Garfield County?
Well, oil and gas is one segment of our economy, and we really have We are diverse in Garfield County that we have seven to ten segments of our, you know, within our economy of different jobs, and oil and gas is one of those. I think the important thing for governments is that oil and gas is a big contributor to property taxes. And that really comes from not so much personal property, but oil and gas is at the pump. They pay a property tax for their natural gas that is produced at the pump, and that has been 50% of the property tax for Garfield County. And but when you go further west and you get into the taxing districts, you know, for your rural fire departments, both Colorado River Fire Department and Grand River Fire Department, that is 80 to 90% of their revenues. So that it affects, you know, how services that people get. And it's also a high percentage in RE16. It's a very high percentage of the property tax that goes back to the school district. And then there's a hospital district there that's a taxing district, Grand River Health, and there's a Parks and Recreation district, and they all rely on those dollars that come from the oil and gas industry, as well as we have a large, you know, it's not a large number as far as percentage wise, but if you start taking the effects of oil and gas, there are a lot of workers that are dependent on oil and gas, and that's those are jobs that pay pretty well, and if we were to lose that within our economy, some of these our towns to the west of us would be back into a recession. So it is an important sector of our economy.
The number of homeless is increasing. As a county commissioner, what will you do about it?
Well, I think the homeless issue is an interesting issue because I think you have two perspectives on that. And I think some of us we see the homeless as the people that are out panhandling and are on our streets. And some of those individuals are transient. They're here for the summer. I think they come here because we do have seasonal jobs. Some people have said that we have more homeless because of our marijuana laws. I don't know if there's any study that shows that. And within that population, I've worked at volunteered at Extended Table, where you feed about 60 people many of them who are homeless in an evening, and some of those individuals have mental health issues, some of them have drug and alcohol abuse issues, and some of them they're a chosen way of life. So we do have in our community, we have as I mentioned, we have Extended Table, we have Feed My Sheep, we have Salvation Army, we have Catholic Charities, we have within Garfield County the Department of Human Services, and so there are a lot of resources for that homeless community. I think there's another concern that I have, and that is because of the high cost of living here in the valley. It doesn't take too much to get knocked out. If you're living paycheck to paycheck, it doesn't take too much to get knocked out of your home, whether you have a medical emergency or one person loses their employment and you can no longer afford to pay for your rent. And so there are services there as well with those same groups, and there's services even within the school district with the resources. Family resource part of the school district where they can help with individuals that, you know, that really we need to get back to. You got to come up with a first and a last, and as far as rent, and, you know, you have to find jobs and things like that. And so Salvation Army has done a good job with that, as well as I think our local churches and our faith our faith-based community, Catholic Charities falling into that. So there are a lot of resources there are resources to help. And so I'm concerned about it, but there's people don't necessarily see that kind of that second sector where you may have a family that's lost their home and they're living in their car to get by, or you have a young student who is sleeping on somebody else's couch things of that nature. And but we do have resources that are here to help that with that.
So having the issue, one of my next questions is if we have a housing and healthcare problem here in the county, what do you propose to this?
Housing is somewhat complex, and it comes from many different avenues as far as the housing. And I will say, you know, the housing costs in Carbondale, Glenwood Springs are much higher than the housing costs that we see in Rifle and Parachute and Battlement Mesa. Those housing costs are in the west end of the county are very similar to Grand Junction. But let's go really to what I would consider the root of the problem. That is that we have 10,000 people a day that are commuting into Aspen and Pitkin County. Well, Aspen, there's probably more if you take Pitkin County and add Snowmass to that. And they're commuting there because the housing is not there. I mean, there is not housing and so it just trickles back down the valley. And not only does it create housing issues, but it also creates if somebody is working 8 hours or 10 hours and they have a hour drive on each side of that, they're not home for very long. So you have children that are, or I guess you might say, latchkey or taking care of themselves, and some of our health and human service issues come from the lack of housing or how difficult it is to have housing. So I think it's important that people be able to live where they work, but that's not necessarily the case in our valley. So how do we address housing? I mean, it's multifaceted. It's some of it is through the county, through your rules and regulations, where we've allowed tiny homes, small homes. We've made it much easier for ADUs, accessory dwelling units, to be attached to homes, which create some rental units. There's housing help through Department of Human Services in some cases, but you also have to look, and within the county, if there's a large subdivision after 15 homes, 10% of those homes need to be affordable housing. So those are some of the rules and regulations. Then actually, you know, it falls to the nonprofit groups as far as, Habitat for Humanity, or it falls to your school district when they put in, within their bond issue, they provided housing in RE1 for school teachers. It also goes back to transportation, because if you can get affordable housing in Parachute and the commute from Parachute to Glenwood is not any different than the commute from Glenwood to Aspen. In fact, in many cases, it's probably less time on the road. But there's not transportation between Parachute and Rifle. In Rifle, you can catch the Hogback and have public transportation into Glenwood. So that's one of my goals, is to get that transportation between Parachute and Rifle. So it is a public-private partnership on housing, and really the bulk of the affordable housing will need to come within the municipalities, because that's where you have your transportation, that's where you have your infrastructure, and it's a better fit for affordable housing. And, oh, yeah, the second part of that question, besides the affordable housing, is health insurance and health care. And that's something that, that's really something that comes from the federal level to start with. When the Affordable Care Act, which is not affordable at all, was put into place, the entire health industry started to change. And there were definitely some benefits to that. We have 27% of our population in Garfield County is on Medicaid, so they're getting affordable care. So they are getting affordable care, but you now have a new class that is without health insurance, and that class is called the middle class, where they can't afford health insurance, and the health insurance they can afford is awful. I'll take an example of one family that pays $1,500 a month. They just have a child, and because of their deductibles, they are out, besides paying their $1,500 a month, they're out $15,000 in deductibles. They have the deductible for the childbirth, and once the child is born, they have the deductible on the child, so they're $13,000 just into the deductible. And then I'll talk about the healthy families that are taking the risk of not having health care, just saying, if it's an individual, it's $1,000 off my bottom line, or if it's a family, it's $3,000 a month. And when I say $1,000, I'm not talking about the year, I'm talking about a month. It's $3,000 a month with very poor deductibles. And so it's an issue that I have worked on in a bipartisan way with other county commissioners in rural Colorado, as well as with our state representatives, just trying to get more equity in health insurance and on the Western Slope, because our costs are so high. We did have some success because at one point we were in a geographic region with Pitkin County, Summit County, and Eagle County, and we had the highest health insurance rates in the nation. We were able to get that geographic region merged with the entire Western Slope, except for Grand Junction, and that brought down our health insurance cost a little bit. But it's almost at crisis level, and it's something I'm working on. We'll continue to work on the next term.
With a population of 50% of Latinos here in Garfield County, you will be in favor of Garfield County becoming a sanitary county?
Okay, well, first of all, Garfield County has, by the state demographer, our population is 28% Latino, and we are, in Eagle County, it's 29%. In Pitkin County, it's 18%. And I think if you could take and do a survey of the workers in Pitkin County, you might find that the working population in Pitkin County is probably 50%. I think your 50% number comes from primarily from the school districts, where in our school districts, the Latino population is at about 50%. But as far as sanctuary city or sanctuary county issue, that really does fall back to our sheriff to some extent. And, just this is from an op-ed that our and I'm going to read this from that our sheriff had, and that is that federal immigration officers, not state or local officers, have the authority to determine immigration status of people in this county or in the state of Colorado. So that means if you are pulled over by really state patrol or by our sheriff, they're not the ones that would take you to ICE or put you into detention. Local law enforcement officers have no authority to enforce federal immigration law. So that's number one thing to remember. We do have immigration detainers, which are signed by ICE agents, not by judges. And so an immigration detainer by ICE cannot be upheld legally by our sheriff's department. So if somebody does go to the county jail, then when they're, if they've served their time or they bond out, then they are let out immediately. They're not detained until ICE shows up. This is the next part. When somebody is jailed, the sheriff does notify ICE, and that whether that be directly or through fingerprints, ICE then will know, and they are advised of the inmate's status. So if an inmate is released, and ICE could be there to pick them up, but that's not always the case. So I think that really comes back to what is sanctuary county or sanctuary county, sanctuary city, and that is that the sheriff's department would not notify ICE, or they would not notify when individuals are being released from the jail. And in Garfield County, we follow the laws of the state of Colorado, and we do work with all law enforcement agencies, and one of the laws or one of the agreements the sheriff has with ICE is that they will provide the information that's necessary, and they will follow, the sheriff will follow the laws of the state of Colorado. I don't see, first of all, that's a sheriff issue, and the Garfield County Commissioners, if we came out with a sanctuary county, that's really just us. It doesn't have any teeth, first of all. And I guess the next thing is if somebody has immigrated into this country and then they are breaking the law, then I don't know why I shouldn't be notified. And that gets into more complicated, issues, because it gets into some common sense issues. And I don't know what don't have demographics on what are undocumented immigrants in our county. The best the best information I have is from the school district, which says about 10% of the about 10% of the students are not documented. And if that were to go back into our so we have 60,000 population, but just about 30% is Latino. So that means you have probably 28,000 Latinos, Hispanics here in Garfield County. So 10% of that population potentially is undocumented. Now that's just but I do know that 10% weaves into the community very, very much. And I want to take just a second and talk about maybe the other side of the coin now. And just when I was volunteering with the group in Rifle that takes Meals on Wheels, they take food to people that can't get out of their house, and I had the opportunity to ride with an individual. And I wanted to say his name, but I didn't talk to him prior to this interview. But young man in Rifle High School, he was a senior, and he volunteered for Meals on Wheels, and he also volunteered for Lift Up on Fridays when the kids are out of school. Lift Up has a kind of a lunch truck that kids can go to and get a free meal. And he volunteers for that. And so I nominated him for the Human Service Commission Youth Volunteer of the Year, and he received that. And he's a DACA. He's here on his DACA papers, and he's a DACA student, yet his sister, who's 4 years younger than him, is an American citizen. Now, this individual, just last Tuesday, we nominated him for the Governor's Volunteer of the Year Award, and he won that award. So that's exciting. So, I really, our immigration system is broken, and it needs to be fixed, and that needs to be fixed at the federal level. And I have, because I know our senators and I know our Representative Tipton in the House of Representatives, and I know our governor and our legislators, I've expressed to all of them that, we need to, first of all, take care of DACA. And I know Senator Gardner and Senator Bennett, who are on opposite sides of the aisle, have introduced DACA reform. But it's really complicated in Washington, because the immigration issue is not just Republicans and Democrats. There are like five different kind of groups with opinions on immigration in Washington. And I can tell another story of a valedictorian from Rifle High School who did not have his DACA papers, and how I was able to work with his sponsor to get them in touch with Senator Gardner's office. His sponsor actually took this young man to Washington, D.C. They met with Senator Gardner. Senator Gardner was able to get his DACA papers for him. So some of the things I can do on immigration are not, I can work with individuals one-on-one, and I have done that.
You kind of explained as well how you can represent the Latinos here in the Valley. But now we're going to skip to diversity. And talking about diversity, why it's so important to have women involved in politicians. It is the perspective of women different than a man?
Well, I will answer that question, but I would also not, I don't want to skip over the question of why Latinos should vote for you. So if we could go back to that, I would like to have a chance to address that. But, you know, diversity is important. And I think as the, well, first of all, we are all diverse in one way or another because we're all individuals. And as individuals, we grow up differently. We have, you know, environment affects how who we are to some extent. Also, our genes affect how we are. And so I'm not really a sociologist or psychologist, but yeah, men and women do, I think, look at things differently. As county commissioners, the beautiful thing about being a county commissioner is this is local politics, and I'm sitting there making decisions about an issue, looking at somebody who's a citizen, a neighbor, a member of our community, in the face, and I'm listening to what their concerns are and why they want to have a decision, favorable decision or opposition decision from me. And so as an individual, you get to look at those individually. And I think I am being actually stereotyped to some extent. And you know, my opponent is Anglo. I'm Anglo. My opponent's female. I'm male. We are both baby boomers. So, you know, and we're in different parties. So we have a different, basically, foundation or background on how we look at things. So, but I really want to go back and talk too about Garfield County, and I'm very proud of the employees in Garfield County, and we have a fairly flat organizational chart. And out of that organizational chart, in what's the administrative side, there are about 350 employees and there are 16 departments. And out of those 16 departments, 10 are headed by women. And those women were not selected because they are women. They were selected because they were because of their character. They were most qualified. They were most educated. And they had a background that that got them into those positions. And they did the best job in the interview as well. And also within our population, we're employee population, we're 53% female. So, you know, that part in Garfield County is very, I guess, balanced would be the word. We are as far as diversity and as far as, but Latinos are 23% of our workforce right now, and so that's a good number. It could come up a little bit more to be equal to what the number of Latinos are in the community. I would like to have people look at an individual's character, their background, you know, and when they're voting. I just think that's extremely important, and not by, you know, if you're a single issue. If you just vote on a single issue, which is I want a female there, then so be it. But I really think, you know, even Dr. Martin Luther King said, judge a person by his character, not by his color. And maybe I want to go back to a little bit to the Latino population. And as an individual, I believe in faith, family, freedom, opportunity, hard work. And I believe those are also values that are there in the Latino population. I grew up in Eastern Colorado where when I was going to high school, there were migrant farmers and workers there that had children, first, second generation. And I went to school with them, played sports with them. I don't see that. I mean, I don't see the differences so much as maybe some other people do.
After 6 years having marijuana legalized here in the county, what is your feedback? Did you change something? Did you want to change something?
I have concerns. I think that marijuana and teenagers, youth using marijuana, there are health issues and there are emotional issues that come with that, especially if somebody is using smoking or using marijuana on a daily basis. I think that is a concern. But it's also, you know, I would have similar concerns with alcohol. And, you know, marijuana it's a part of our business community now. It's a part of our culture. And so we just need to regulate it as much as possible. I was happy to hear at least the numbers from Youth Zone did not show an increase in marijuana use in the youth in our county. And, you know, I think the educational part, especially back to our youth, is very important. There are some good aspects of what's happened with marijuana, and that are some of the with the medical marijuana, the Charlotte's Web, which helps with epilepsy and seizures. It helps that. So I think there are some things that are positive as well. So no, I would not change that. I think our voters voted 8 years ago on the use of marijuana in unincorporated Garfield County. So most of the use is in the municipalities, and a lot of the regulations are there within the municipalities.
If you elected, what are your three short-term goals?
Well, I mean, there's some capital improvement goals that are there that I think we'll be able to knock out fairly quickly. And one is a trail from Iron Bridge and West Bank to the new Riverside School. Right now you have a school in unincorporated Garfield County, and the school administration insists that everybody drive to school or ride the school bus because there aren't good trails to that school. So I think that's important. I think another thing this year, working with Representative Bob Rankin, we can make some headway on health insurance costs. Then the third one would be transportation to Parachute. I believe we can get that transportation in place by 2019. In the county, it's not just my decision to do things. It's the Board of County Commissioners. So on all those things for funding, need a second vote. But I think I have those in place. So,
last of all, what do you respect and admire for your community?
Well, I've talked about the quality of life, and there is a this is a beautiful place to work, and I've talked about, you know, jobs, and there are jobs and opportunity available here, and I haven't really talked about the Human Service Commission, but there are so many caring people. We have over 36 nonprofits in that Human Service Commission. So there are a lot of people that are reaching out with services, and so that's very positive for our county as well. And our county is very diverse. And one thing that I've really appreciated as a county commissioner is, you know, I really, when I was the general manager of Sunlight Mountain Resort, I was working just in the Roaring Fork Valley, and really within Glenwood Springs, and I've been able to reach out and meet people, you know, from Parachute to Carbondale that I wouldn't have had a chance to meet with before. And so I think, you know, the final word is, I think there's compassion. There's compassion here in our county.
Thank you, Tom. Anything else that you want to add?
I'll go back to Martin Luther King's quote there, and to choose a person by their character and their qualifications and by the individual they are. And I do have a strong background, and I have been a business leader, and have continued to be a leader as a county commissioner. And, you know, I care about and I want to be fair with our community. I think that I would just like to put this out here, and if there should not be any children in our county that are going hungry. So if there is anybody that knows about that and somebody hasn't gotten services, please contact me or contact Crystal yourself, so we can get help. And I think also one thing I missed on the schools is what can Garfield County do for the schools. I think through the Human Service Commission, we can really help the family and help provide services for the family, so we have a foundation so students aren't going to aren't distracted at school because they're hungry, or if we have a student with mental health issues, they're not disturbing the class, we can find help for them through our Human Service Commission. So I think that family unit and how Garfield County can help that family unit is so important.
Thank you so much.